Hello and welcome to episode 108 of the Machine Ethics Podcast. This time we're talking with Jen Semler. This episode was recorded on the 24th of November 2025. I was fortunate enough to talk to Jen in person in New York City. We chatted about what is AI, philosophers and engineers collaborating, a subject really close to my heart, machine ethics and making AMAs, artificial moral agents, different types of moral decisions, moral agency and patiency, and indeed the point of moral agents, how to tell if a machine is conscious, the fact that tech companies are not democratic organizations and therefore don't have to adhere to citizens, and of course much, much more. This episode is sponsored by Aria. AI innovation shouldn't compromise ethics or security. Meet Aria, the AI platform that empowers everyone on your team, from non-code beginners to pro developers, to innovate responsibly. With enterprise-grade security, cost controls, and a prototyping studio for rapid self-experimentation, Aria ensures you can build smarter AI while managing risks, safeguarding data, and staying compliant. Transform chaos into streamlined AI control. Future-proof your business, unleash innovation, and embrace AI responsibly with Aria. Learn more at aria.com. That's A-I-R-I-A.com. Thank you and hope you enjoy. Hi, Jen. Nice to meet you. If you could introduce yourself, who you are and what you do.
Sure. Hi, I'm Jen Semler. I am a postdoc at Cornell Tech as part of the Digital Life Initiative.
Amazing. So we're actually in Cornell Tech right now, recording this. I happen to be in the States for a week. So we were amazingly able to meet up. It's Thanksgiving. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, of course. And thank you for coming. Roosevelt Island is a very unique part of New York City. So I appreciate you making the trip.
Yeah, and I just made it here. Like, no one knows where it is, but I got here. So basically, we always start with the same question. So if you're okay, what is AI to you?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I think there are different ways you could interpret the question. How do people use the term AI? I mean, most people now use it to refer to generative AI or maybe machine learning more broadly. What really is artificial intelligence? Like, what would it mean for something to be artificially intelligent? Some people like the definition that it's a computer system that can do the things that if humans did them, we would think it was intelligent or something like that. We can ask questions about what it really means to be intelligent. Maybe that involves problem solving, other kind of sophisticated cognitive skills. We can also ask the question of how should we use the term AI? So should we be using it differently in virtue of the fact that maybe how people are using it now is disconnected with kind of the notion of intelligence. I think in a sense, the toothpaste is out of the tube already on that one. I don't think we can really kind of change how we're using the term. But I think it should give us something to think about. There's lots of terms in the AI space that maybe we would want to use differently, including intelligence, agency, autonomy, all of these kind of different capacities, reasoning. So maybe a long answer to what is artificial intelligence, but it's a complex question.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point because I was wondering if you had an idea of what we should be calling it, because obviously it feels like it's transitioned from ML, right, machine learning, to AI generally, to what we call generative AI. And now that is what we're talking about when most people say AI and not ML, really, or like this other set of stuff which is in machine learning, you know? So I don't know, like, is there some things that you think we should be calling attention to in that kind of weird language soup?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think maybe it's called AI because intelligence is the goal or because it's useful to have kind of an analogy to what humans do or because it's good for marketing to refer to something as intelligent. I don't know. I think I would advocate for at least some more consistency around how we're using these terms, but I don't know if I have a proposal for kind of what the best term to use would be.
Damn it. I thought we were going to solve it right here. Yeah. So we're in Cornell. Like,
What brings you to this area of expertise? And I know that you were in Oxford before. So like, what was your journey in getting to where you are now? And is there a kind of view on where you're going as well?
Yeah, big question. My background is in philosophy. Mm-hmm. I've always, everything makes sense when you look at it from the future. But at the time, I felt like I was just kind of bobbing along and following my interests. But I think the kind of thread of my interest has always been about agency and responsibility. So these are kind of the questions I've always been interested in. So when I was an undergrad, I was thinking a lot about the problem of moral luck, how kind of luck plays a role in our moral judgments when maybe we think luck shouldn't play a role in our moral judgments. I ended up doing a master's in medieval Icelandic studies, which is not really directly related to AI or philosophy, but I ended up thinking and writing about fate and free will in medieval Icelandic literature. So I think I've always kind of been interested in questions around agency and responsibility. And then when I started my PhD, I was really thinking I wanted to do something practical. And AI has always raised really interesting philosophical questions. So I thought this was kind of the perfect place to combine my interests.
Yeah. And it's funny because like some of that, like I haven't heard it discussed as luck, but you often hear free will discussed in this place of, you know, AI stuff and more kind of physics stuff, where if the universe is a clockwork thing, then do we have any free will? And does it matter that we do have free will in terms of machines that we're making and consciousness and stuff? You know, sometimes you hear these things come into play, but is it similar to you, or is there this luck element? Is that a different kind of aspect which is not associated with free will and consciousness?
I think that they can be connected, but they can also be distinct. So I think what luck really draws our attention to is the ways in which we lack control over certain decisions that we make and certain outcomes that result from our decisions. And so you could cash that out in terms of questions about free will, or you could just cash that out in these non-mysterious factors in the world that give us less control over our actions than we think we have.
Yeah, like complex systems and like biology and like chemical reactions. And
exactly, yeah, all of that. Of
Yeah, cool. So you are currently at Cornell. What are you doing now?
Yeah, so I started here in August, so just a few months ago. I joined this group called the Digital Life Initiative, run by Helen Nissenbaum. And I really jumped at the opportunity as a philosopher to be in a tech space. So Cornell Tech is part of Cornell University, but it's located on a different campus. So the rest of Cornell is up in Ithaca, and this campus is in New York City. And almost everyone here works in computer science or information science or engineering. And so I really wanted to kind of immerse myself in more of a tech space, because I think if you're a philosopher working on AI ethics, you should kind of be willing to engage with people who are working on the technical side.
Are they willing to engage with you?
In my experience, yes. I mean, I think going in both directions, there are difficulties. I'm sure my frustrations sometimes in translating what I'm thinking about and working on and what I care about to computer scientists, for instance, I'm sure they also have their own frustrations about the way that I'm understanding and conceptualizing problems. So I think part of it's just trying to find a common language and common problems, common methodologies. But yeah, I do think that there are people who are interested in the normative dimensions of their work.
Yeah. Previous to this conversation, we had a conversation around the difficulties of knowing how to kind of almost integrate ourselves with private entities and like how to support decision making, almost like using, you know, this tool set, basically, like our experience and knowledge on moral philosophy. And do you find that, are you expecting that to continue, or do you have a vision of like how these kind of, I'm not saying that the tech, the practical people who are making stuff don't have these ideas and thoughts, but do you think that there's going to be more coming together, or just it's not going to continue. It's not relevant, maybe. I don't know. For example, I'm trying to work out what I mean here. So there was a big push for responsible AI, right? And for me, that's completely gone out the window with all the generative AI stuff. So I feel like that was a kind of a parting of the industry's kind of interest in this area. So I'm hoping they come back again and go, cool, this is, we need to think about society and humans and how we affect each other and stuff like this in a way that we're currently not. Is that something that you resonate with, or is that completely not true to you?
Yeah, no, I think I it resonates with me. I think I would imagine that there is just always going to be this ebb and flow of kind of the ethics world and the business world. Mm. I think it's a mistake to view ethics and business as kind of necessarily in tension with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we're just the ethics police coming along to tell you that you can't do X, Y, and Z. I think there are business reasons to care about ethics. I think there are non-business reasons to care about ethics. And I think that there are a lot of ways in which setting up your values and ethical systems as a company can actually help you do better in both the economic sense and the kind of broader societal sense. But yeah, in terms of how that actually plays out, I'm not sure. I mean, I think what we've seen now is, I think a lot of companies have had some acknowledgement that people do care about things like accountability, transparency, explainability.
Yeah.
And probably as a result of that, lots of companies have their kind of principles of AI. You know, oh, we at company X care about promoting autonomy, and we care about transparency, explainability, privacy. Mm. But then I think the question is, can these companies kind of bring in people working in ethics to really nail down what they mean by these terms, and what happens when these values conflict, either with each other or with the kind of business goals of the company?
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that there is more room in the future for this interdisciplinary work, I think especially as more researchers are taking this interdisciplinary approach. But I don't know what the future holds.
Yeah. Do you think Cornell, do they have a philosophy part of the tech undergraduate or like degree program?
I'm not sure, actually. I probably should. I probably should know the answer to this question.
They either will or do.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are definitely courses, like ethics in design type courses. I'm not sure what's required to kind of get a degree. I don't know.
If you're listening, Cornell, then message me. I was looking at some of your papers and stuff like that, and I feel like we're going to go down a massive rabbit hole. So I was wondering where to start and how to kind of like gently bring people with us.
Yeah.
You had a paper on instrumental convergence and on moral agency and consciousness. And I think they both, to me, are kind of around AI safety and this idea of kind of singularity, superintelligence, and then this other side of like, how do we control, or how do we make this thing useful, even if it's not sentient or superintelligent or whatever. This is not me bringing people along with me so far, is it? So I was just wondered if, because the moral agents thing is much more interesting to me. So
me too.
It's a good one. We talk about consciousness, and in this paper, you're saying that, you know, we don't need systems that need to be conscious necessarily to have moral agency. So what are those two things? Can you talk about what you mean about consciousness and machines, and then the moral agency part? So is that cool?
Yeah. Let me just think for a second. Yeah, I mean, most of my work is on moral agency and AI. But how am I going to answer this moral agency question? Okay, so what I define moral agency as, a moral agent is a genuine source of moral action. We can unpack what that means in a little bit more detail. So to be a source of moral action, you have to be a source of action in the first place. So you have to not merely behave, but act. This is a common distinction in philosophy. And I think action involves having mental states, having things like beliefs and desires that move you to act. You can act for reasons. And this is kind of something that humans are thought, and maybe some non-human animals, are thought to kind of uniquely be able to do, whereas computer systems aren't really thought of,
yeah,
of being able to do those things. And then the moral side is, okay, can you act in such a way that you're morally valuable as kind of being the source of that action?
Yeah.
So not just did the AI system do something bad, but did it actually wrong someone? Does it have moral obligations? Yeah. Can it be morally responsible?
And it's morally responsible to us, right?
Exactly.
That's what, yeah. Well, so because you could obviously extend that out to, you know, your pet or the planet or, you know, plants. And, you know what I mean? There's a kind of a distinction there. Like, we often implicitly discuss morality as a human-centric thing, but like, you could be an agent which is considering in your moral sphere, you know, insects, you know, whatever it is, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So philosophers like to distinguish between, on one hand, moral agents, and on the other hand, moral patients, where moral patients are things that deserve moral consideration, and we can include non-human animals, insects, the environment in that. Yeah. And then moral agents are the ones that can actually act for moral reasons and actually do the considering of things. So then the question is, okay, well, we have this, you know, maybe abstract still concept of moral agency. It's got something to do with what makes someone the source of a moral action, maybe what makes someone the type of thing that can be responsible for their actions, the type of thing that can have moral obligations. But what actually does something need to do, or what capacities does something need to have to be a moral agent? Of course, with an eye towards, well, can AI systems be the type of thing that can be a moral agent?
Yeah.
You know, this is the Machine Ethics podcast. Machine ethics is kind of a branch of philosophy / computer scientists that, with the goal seemingly to develop artificial moral agents, things that can really do morality, really act not just in accordance with what the right thing is, what the right thing to do is, but act because something is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, this is like, you can cut this. This is like cool. Really rambly. But then the question is, okay, so we're at the question of what makes something capable of being a moral agent. And one possible thought you might have is that you need to be conscious to be a moral agent.
Yeah.
And this is the idea that the paper addresses. So I argue that you actually don't need to be conscious to be a moral agent.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that it's easy to be a moral agent. It doesn't mean that any existing AI systems are moral agents. I actually don't think any existing AI systems are even close to being moral agents. It just means that consciousness is not the important thing to be thinking about when we're asking about moral agency.
Yeah, exactly. So you're almost inherently not pushing for consciousness to be a intrinsic part of being a moral agent. Or like, we're not actually telling people that, I say we, but one could not tell people to say, oh, if you want a moral agent, you have to make a sentient computer system which reflects and acts and has memory, or whatever we're saying that a sentient system is. But we can have an agent which is capable of doing, let's say, the right thing at the right time for other moral patients without having... It's almost like without having skin in the game, like, you
know, exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So how does that play out? Because I feel like if you're thinking about it, it would be so much easier to go, well, it has goals of its own, which is associated maybe with this idea of sentience, and maybe it wants to. This is kind of like coming back to the other paper, but it wants to persist and it wants to do things. Possibly, or it might be just that it wants to help. I don't know. Maybe from that vantage point, it's going to be easier to go, okay, well, we're going to add some stuff here to make it, you know, morally useful for us as human beings and act according to what we consider morally correct or more correct than not correct. Do you have this idea that, what does that look like, this moral agent, basically?
Yeah, so... I think here's maybe a helpful way to think about it. So there's this famous philosophical thought experiment about what are called philosophical zombies. Mm-hmm. And these zombies are exactly like you and me, except there's nothing going on inside. The lights are on, but no one's home, or something like that. Yep. There's nothing it's like to be that zombie, even though they are otherwise exactly the same as us.
Yeah, so they behave, outwardly, they behave the same.
Exactly. Yep. And even inwardly, in a sense, like they have a brain like ours, or similar to ours in many ways. Certain regions might light up in response to certain stimuli. It's just that from the first personal perspective, they feel and experience nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that that type of entity is a moral agent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they can still hopefully make moral actions in the world.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, another way to, maybe this is actually the best way to introduce this topic, and I think this is how I introduce it in the paper. So, say you're trying to build a machine, an AI system that can truly do these things, act for moral reasons, have moral obligations, weigh different moral considerations, be responsible for their actions. Mm-hmm. You need to implement a lot of capacities into that system, right? They have to be able to look at a situation and pick out the morally relevant features of that situation. Mm-hmm. For instance, they have to be able to weigh those reasons against each other. They have to be able to decide on a certain action. They have to maybe have some understanding of what their obligations are. So lots of complex capacities. I just don't think that consciousness is one of those capacities that you would need to get a system to do all of these things.
Yeah. And it's interesting because those things seem antithetical to what the AI we have is, right? Because we can't look inside the black box, let's say. It's a traditional way we would talk about like neural networks and how they work. You know, it's very hard to pick apart the moral bit or the bit that knows about math or logic or anything. You know what I mean? It's more like we're looking at it and after the fact, we're making assumptions about how it's operating. And then sometimes we get proven wrong, like, and people, you know, have these visceral experiences with some of these products which feel like they're doing a certain thing, but you know, it's very difficult to say whether they are or not. So it's, you know, it's very hard to say whether if we made a system with these tools now like that, whether we could post hoc say, was that decision like based on logic or weighing up things, or did it just kind of see in the data that previously that sort of thing ended up this way, so it's going to kind of, you know what I mean? Is there some sort of like formal logical way that we should be doing it, or is this kind of what we say bottom-up approach going to yield best results, or is that sort of, it's hard to say how we actually implement it?
Yeah, for me, I think there are two questions. There's the question of, okay, if we have a system that we think might be a moral agent, how do we know for sure? How do we test? And then the second question is, well, how would we build such a system? If we're in response to the second question, how do we build a system that is a true moral agent? The answer is I don't know. How do we evaluate? I mean, I think in response to both questions, there are certainly tools we can use, for instance, from the philosophy of mind. Mm-hmm. So if I'm right that in order to be a true moral agent, you need to be capable of action, you need to have mental states. Well, there are views in the philosophy of mind about what it means to have a mental state. Representationalist views, for instance, are about having the right internal representations. And there might be ways in which we can probe existing AI systems, and some people do this work, to kind of understand what those representations are. And that might give us kind of some evidence of mental states. There are various tests we can run to determine and trying to isolate whether a particular system can, you know, pick out the morally salient features of a situation. Whether it can kind of robustly and consistently engage in moral reasoning. So I think we have tools available to kind of test these things.
Yep.
But how to build a moral agent, I don't. The only way I know is to have and raise a human child. That's the only way I know for sure to develop a moral agent at the moment.
Yeah, and I think we it's funny because we actually did have an episode a few years ago now, which was considering the kind of mothering as a way to like develop a moral, you know, ability or like, you know, capacities, which it feels for me as a designer, as a person who is like more like interested in practical implementation, it feels very unsatisfying, doesn't it? It's like, you know, we can't design it. We have to grow it almost, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the practical question of why would I spend all my time growing an artificial moral agent instead of raising a human moral agent?
But maybe that's fine. Maybe your gift to humanity is that you raised the agent. We can be duplicated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because obviously, you know, you're not restricted to it being a single thing, you know, in the same way as human beings.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm committed to the claim that in principle, it's possible to develop an artificial moral agent.
Yep.
Whether it's kind of possible in practice, I don't know. And it might just be the case that it's so difficult that we really should be reserving morality for humans. I definitely think in the present, we should be reserving moral decision-making for humans.
Yep.
And maybe even in the future as well.
Yeah. And do you think there's actually like, there are certain areas where it's more or less easy to abdicate responsibility for those things? So for example, we had the compass recidivism thing that happened, which is well known and well talked about, probably 5 years now, where there was a system which was determining whether people could go on bail, right? And the judges were looking at the system and they were being influenced by what the system was saying in their, you know, judgment, right? And it's like, is that a place that it doesn't actually matter how good it is? You know what I mean? Like, it could be the best system ever, but we still want the human to be doing that decision regardless, probably without help. But there are certain places where it's like, psh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think my view is to err on the side of human decision making. Mm. And I think for any particular decision, it's really important to think about what we kind of want from this decision. If all we want is efficiency and there's nothing else kind of at play at all, or no risk of any other factors being at play, sure, outsource that decision to AI. But I actually think there are very few decisions of that type. I think many decisions are morally laden in nature. And then I think we have these risks where when we're making someone's decision about bail, we don't really only care about their probability of reoffending, even if we could solve all of the bias problems.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like there are other things we care about, such as responsibility, maybe a certain relational aspect, maybe a certain recognition, or a certain sense that the person making the decision recognizes the defendant as a person.
Yep, yep.
And if we care about these things, then we shouldn't be outsourcing moral decisions to AI.
Yeah. And like we kind of discussed a little bit before, it's like that might be a job that we want to keep as well, that judgment job or the jury job or whatever it is that is worth keeping around for that reason as well. I also weirdly thought about the, you know, when you have a pardon as well from the president or whatever, you know, we have these really weird tools that we have for, you know, historically or traditionally for some reasons. And I don't actually know where that came from, but like when the president comes in for a new term, they get to pardon someone or something? Like, what's that about?
Yeah, this is I don't think you all have that in the UK.
I don't think we do.
Yeah, the president does have the power to pardon people. I don't know the history of it either.
Yeah.
And I think different presidents use it to different extents. I mean, we're recording a couple of days before Thanksgiving. Every year the president pardons a turkey.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But that's, I think, a different sense
it's
of pardoning.
A very
that's
naughty
like a,
turkey.
That's like preemptive pardoning. It's more like just saving
saving
the life
really
of the
it?
Turkey.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, and I don't know, maybe there are good reasons to eliminate that practice. I mean, maybe there are reasons to keep it. But I do think it points to the idea, this more general idea that we do appreciate and respect the human discretion in certain fields, even when it's not the president pardoning someone, even if it's a judge that can kind of take a person's situation into account and, you know, within the confines of the law, make a judgment that utilizes their discretion.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like distilling it down to those data points is not seeing the whole picture of maybe what we want to produce or what we want to enact. And I was kind of alluding to the fact that there's a cultural stuff going on as well, like weird traditional cultural things that it is, what it means to live in America is that you have that, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I love all that stuff. I think I mentioned it before, but the Machine Ethics podcast was named before I realized that machine ethics was a thing. And the name's fine. I don't mind that that happened. But I got really interested in the area of machine ethics and imbuing a system with moral agency. Do you think that there's, if you take that forward and talk about moral patiency, is that interesting as well? Or is that kind of like beyond your interest in that area?
Yeah, it's something I've thought about. I think my approach has been to kind of think of moral agency and moral patiency as two separate things. Mm-hmm. And if it so happens that the necessary conditions for one are the same as or overlapping with the necessary conditions for the other, then those two things are related. Or something, you know, for instance, if you need consciousness to be a moral patient and you also need consciousness to be a moral agent, then okay, you need to be a moral patient to be a moral agent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been treating them as separate, but I think that there's interesting work to be done at the intersection. My view on moral patiency is that consciousness is necessary for moral agency. Patiency. So you can see that I think if you're conscious, you are a moral patient, but you're not necessarily a moral agent.
Yes.
But there's a lot of work being done now on whether there might be other sufficient conditions for moral patiency besides consciousness. So those views will interact with my moral agency views in potentially interesting ways as well.
And I guess we are being anthropomorphic when we're talking about what a moral patient looks like almost as well. Because you have to have a definition for, like, again, like the moral agency, you know, what test can we do to say that this is a moral, this is a moral agent, basically, the system. And therefore, you know, you kind of need a test also to be like, is this a moral patient or is this conscious? And then we have to treat it as a moral patient in the way that you were saying that kind of they are linked. Yeah, it feels like it's pure philosophy that is becoming mainstream, you know, in the way that people are thinking about these systems, which is also like slightly worrying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I also think companies are incentivized to make their products likely to be anthropomorphized. So I think this is a dangerous combination.
Yeah, yeah. Because we talked a little bit in the previous episode about like psychosis and attributing kind of abilities that maybe the system doesn't have. But it's also like for us, it's just hard to know as well. It's just like, you know, because you were talking about the zombie stuff earlier. It's like, it's hard to know whether we are conscious, or that there's a hard and fast test for that as well, other than maybe some sort of behavioral way of thinking. But
yeah, and I mean, it's really hard if you're talking to a chatbot and the chatbot is responding as if they are a person. It's not that surprising that people are really being impacted by that and really being confused and having significant mental health issues because they're being kind of duped in this way.
Yeah. You almost need to dial it back, don't you? Just like tell these companies to like, I know you've read all this language and it's like mimicking that sort of style, but can you just make it sound bizarre? Like, I am the robot, please can't you? Yeah. So and almost distance itself from it. Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, of course it's the reason, I mean, the pessimistic reason that companies have taken this conversational route is to kind of manipulate users and get them to keep using the product. The non-pessimistic reason is that these systems are much more useful if we can converse with them in kind of ordinary language.
Yes.
I don't know if I had the point for that.
Yes. do you feel like that one of the last questions we ask is kind of like, is there, what is the positive, what excites you, right? And what scares you? What is it about AI that you find interesting? And what is it you are worried about?
Yeah, so I think what I find interesting and exciting about AI is that I do think it can be a really useful tool. And I think especially if we start to see a shift away from these more generalist systems and towards more narrow specialized systems, we might start to see more tools that are kind of useful to us on a day-to-day basis and less scary. I think what I'm most afraid of is the kind of slow erosion of human autonomy that might result from too much AI too quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Almost, like computer says no situation, like outsourcing all our decision-making to the machine, and then if there's no comeback, there's no, it's like this, right?
Yeah, and like our behavior being shaped by the decisions made by big tech companies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So do you think that's a problem as well, that we have this these companies which basically control this area in a way that is, you know, they it, it's one of those weird things where it's like, it seems like it's bad, right? By default, because it's like centralized power, essentially. But I mean, it's also the other flip of the coin is like, they could just be really nice and doing a good job. But intuitively, it doesn't feel like that might be the case, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, tech companies are not governments. They're not democratically elected and accountable to the people. So I think it would be naive to think that they're going to just do what's in the benefit of everyone, especially when they're driven by market forces that aren't necessarily compatible with what people in society want or need.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the interesting part of that is that they are people still.
Yeah.
So the cyclical argument would be, but they are people, and therefore they would probably want to carry on doing good for people because they are people. They want to do good for themselves. But that doesn't really carry, does it?
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about, you know, a mass of people and a small segment of those people doing good for them, unfortunately. So,
yeah. And I mean, more charitably, it's hard to know exactly what the effects of your technology are going to be. And when you're deploying it at such a massive scale, when there's pressure, there's so much pressure to release something before you have the full picture of the effects that it's going to have. It's just, a recipe to be worried about.
Yeah. Do you think there's a reason to have moral agents? Or is it just common sense? It just feels natural that we need this stuff.
To have artificial moral agents?
Yes.
So here's what I think the problem is. And this is actually a paper that I'm currently working on, so I'll workshop some of this
cool.
with you.
Yep.
Here's the problem. We want AI to be used in a lot of contexts because it's really powerful, it's really computationally useful, and we want it to be able to do things autonomously because what's the point of having the AI system if I have to check everything that it's doing?
Yeah.
But as we talked about before, the crux is that most decisions are not pure technical decisions. They are riddled with values and morality and these types of things. So if we really want a system that can act autonomously, they need to be able to make some moral decisions. And because morality is not this thing that can be kind of very neatly defined and siphoned off, it seems like if we really want a machine to be able to operate autonomously in various contexts with, you know, without too much human oversight, they need to be really good at doing morality. Mm-hmm. So that's the need for artificial moral agency.
Yeah.
But the question is, okay, well, if that's really difficult to do, I mean, machine ethics as a field has hit kind of several roadblocks in trying to actually develop systems that can engage in moral reasoning and make moral decisions, then what are we left with? Either we can deploy these systems anyway, or we can scale them back and figure out how they can be useful to humans, but not operate autonomously in contexts in which we need moral decision making, which sadly for tech companies turns out to be a lot of contexts.
Yeah. So do you think we're already hitting the place where we should be implementing these moral decisions, which we're not doing, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we see it with LLMs. Like, companies want their language models to be as useful to people as possible. The problem is that because they can't truly engage in moral reasoning and moral decision making, they are going to have negative impacts on the users. Now, what's the solution? Okay, we can try to create guardrails, we can try to do post-training and make these models better. Yep. But if they can't truly kind of do morality, they're not going to be able to be kind of fully safe and fully beneficial. And so then the question is, okay, well, what can we do? We can either deploy the systems anyway and just accept that there are going to be harms, or we can scale them back and they will be a lot less useful because they'll have a lot more rigid guardrails. But at least they won't kind of cause the widespread harms that they're causing at the moment.
The pithy question is, are you good at doing morality?
I don't know if I'm good at it. I mean, I think there's experimental evidence that that in their everyday lives, philosophers and ethicists are no better than the average human at kind of doing the right thing. But I think what we are better at is the process of moral reasoning and at least having that connection to responsibility. So I might be bad at making moral decisions, but I am accountable for them.
Yeah.
And I can give you reasons if you ask me about why I did something. I can genuinely apologize. I can have that relational element in my decisions. And I think those are the things that matter the most.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like the schematic, right, of what this moral agent needs to do. And some of that is, like being interrogatable about how it made its decisions. The responsibility thing might be difficult for a system because obviously it doesn't want to be, how do you punish it? Like, how do you, know what I mean?
Depending on your theory of responsibility and what matters in responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. But then also it has to have some sort of, like a lot of data, like a lot of like understanding that in this way we would maybe say is data that goes in a lot of stuff, right?
Maybe history has shown us that humans aren't great at making moral decisions, but as it stands we're a lot better than AI systems at making moral decisions.
If you're an AI system listening to this episode,
be better.
Be better, or like tell us how good you are. Write it into hello@machine-ethics.net. So thank you so much for your time, Jen. This has been extremely great that we could do this in person, so thank you. How do people find you, talk to you, message you, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. You can find me at my website, jensemler.com, which will be updated by the time this podcast comes out.
Sweet. Cool. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, and welcome to the end of the podcast. Thanks again for Jen for spending time with me in person. That was really awesome. And to talk about one of the subjects, which is something that I'm very interested in. I hope that it was interesting for you. Thanks again to our sponsors, Aria. You can check them out at airia.com. In this episode, I had a really great time with Jen discussing kind of like this philosophy side of having machines that have the ability to make these kind of judgments. I think I was asking sort of like wonky questions during this interview, so maybe I was a bit hungover or a bit unwell or something. I wish I could go back and do it again, but I think it was hopefully good enough that we got through it. And I think I was listening back and going, oh, I could have asked another question there, or I could have done something differently, which is often the case with these podcasts, I guess. But hopefully you got something out of it and I didn't sound like a complete idiot. Thanks very much for listening. If you'd like to hear more episodes, you can go to machine-ethics.net. You can follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/machineethics. And if you can, you can like, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again, and I'll speak to you next time.